The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. Of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
We love it.
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. It is Monday, July 22nd, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. We're so glad you can join us today, and I am so excited. I spent my first weekend in my new home, the Buck and Bronco House, just 8 blocks away here from Roll the Tide Studios. We're slowly but surely getting all moved in, and on Wednesday, that will be our last show from our temporary studios here at Roll the Tide. That's right, and Wednesday night, the Red Eyes Reggae Flashback may be the first show from the new Rolla J Studios. So, congratulations. Yeah, Brian the Red will be opening up our new studio. Sounds pretty fun, huh?
We've been rolling along, and the new Rolla J is just a few blocks away.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I hope you guys enjoy the new setup. Big studio space. We'll have the green screen back up, and better this time, because it'll be flat up against the wall. Better lighting, and a tile floor. We can actually roll across the floor. That's going to be very nice. So, looking forward to that. We'll bring you all sorts of pictures and videos as we get moved in. Now, on today's show, it's Monday, and as you know, we have moved our regular segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Our cannabis Q&A segment is every Monday now. So at the bottom of the hour, 3:30 Pacific time, we're going to talk with Dr. Mitch, get his latest interpretations of the cannabis science that's out there, and take your live calls and questions via chat. You can call 971-533-7111 or just get into our chat room at Ustream and you can ask your live questions of one of America's top marijuana researchers. Also on today's show, in our Radical Rant segment, we're going to take a look at the origins of the word marijuana. You may have heard all sorts of theories and speculation about where the word marijuana came from. We're going to take a look at the historical record and try to get to the bottom of this in our Radical Rant segment. In our Behind the Headlines segment today, we're going to take a look at craft breweries, something that Portland is very fond of, being beervana. We're going to take a look at these craft breweries that are merging with the marijuana culture now that marijuana is somewhat legal and legal in a couple of states, and how they're having to get around an obscure federal regulation that prevents them from mentioning marijuana. The beer makers are going to help us fight the ad wars. This is going to be a lot of fun. Also, in today's 420 Radio News, we got some headlines, including a look at mangoes, a fruit you stoners ought to start thinking about stocking up on. And our Daily Toker Tunes today, in celebration of the Northwest String Summit, we've got some Yonder Mountain String Band. It's a chock full show, plus an hour two, some Trayvon Martin rally coverage from our own Brian the Red. Stick around, it's the Russ Belville Show. We'll be right back.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
This is your 420 Radio News for Monday, July 22nd, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Federal bill would up penalties for marijuana trespass grows from theweedblog.com. A bill introduced Thursday by Congressman Jared Huffman of California and bipartisan co-sponsors from California and Colorado would create new penalties for marijuana growers who grow on federal land or who trespass on other people's private property to grow and who cause environmental damages. Trespass grows are a tempting alternative for growers who seek to avoid having their own property seized under federal drug asset forfeiture laws. Growing marijuana on federal lands, or anywhere else for that matter, is already against federal law, but the cutely acronymed Protecting Lands Against Narcotic Trafficking, or PLANT Act, would instruct the U.S. Sentencing Commission to establish new penalties for trespass grows. The bill identified three environmental concerns: the illegal use of pesticides, rodenticides, or high-grade fertilizers, the substantial pilfering of water from local aquifers, and significant removal of timber or other vegetation. The bill has been referred to the House Judiciary Committee. Marijuana does not promote liver disease progression in HIV or Hep C co-infected people, from HIVandHepatitis.com. Smoking cannabis was not associated with liver fibrosis progression in a study of nearly 700 people with HIV and hepatitis C co-infection, according to a study described in the June 28, 2013 advanced edition of Clinical Infectious Diseases. Lawrence Burnett from McGill University and fellow investigators with the Canadian co-infection cohort sought to estimate the effect of regular marijuana smoking on liver disease progression among 690 HIV Hep C co-infected people from 17 HIV clinics across Canada who did not have significant fibrosis or end-stage liver disease at baseline. There were no differences between marijuana users and non-users. The study found no evidence that marijuana smoking was associated with accelerated progression to significant liver fibrosis or cirrhosis. Smoking an additional 10 joints per week was associated with a slight increase in the risk of clinical cirrhosis or cirrhosis and end-stage liver disease combined. However, when exposure was lagged or limited to 6 to 12 months before diagnosis, marijuana use no longer showed a significant association with either outcome. Based on these findings, the study authors concluded, quote, "In this prospective analysis, we found no evidence for an association between marijuana smoking and significant liver fibrosis progression in HIV Hep C co-infection." State senator leading another charge for medical marijuana from WHAS11.com, Louisville. A Louisville senator is hoping to add Kentucky to the list of 18 states that have legalized medical marijuana. State Senator Perry Clark has introduced a bill for the 2013 legislative session that would legalize pot for medical use in Kentucky. He and the group of Kentuckians for Medical Marijuana were celebrating at Clark's Louisville home Sunday because there will be a public hearing on August 21st in the Health and Welfare Joint Senate House Committee. Quote, "It's time. 40% of the states have already passed medical marijuana laws, and Kentucky has kind of fallen behind on that. The science is far on our side. Cannabis is medicine. It's medicine in its many forms," end quote, Clark said. Senator Clark introduced a similar bill last year, but it failed to gain any traction. Why should cannabis be considered doping in sports? From Frontiers in Addictive Disorders and Behavioral Discontrol. The World Anti-Doping Agency included cannabis in its prohibited list in 2014, claiming that cannabis may improve performance in some sports and is an illegal drug in some countries. Cannabis smoking can be helpful for some activities such as extreme sports, as it improves muscle relaxation, reduces anxiety, and extincts fear memories, for example, negative experiences, leading to enhanced performances. It is also worthwhile to note that cannabis smoking improves sleep time and recovery, which may favor performance when an athlete is facing multiple competitions in a short period of time. Mangoes elevate high from smoking marijuana. Are they a healthier alternative to the munchies? From MedicalDaily.com. The recreational and medical drug marijuana has increased in consumption due to its relatively low risks in comparison with alcohol and tobacco. For recreational and medicinal users of the drug, consuming a mango before or after inhalation can prolong the high effect, providing additional aid to chronic pain sufferers. Mangoes are low in calories, as one mango contains 135 calories, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. This has been your 420 Radio News for Monday, July 22nd, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines to take a look at marijuana-loving beer breweries that are embracing weed-themed branding, despite a federal prohibition on such branding. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back.
Woodpipe Smoke Shop and Speakeasy is your source for cannabis community gear in southern Wisconsin. Owners Brian and Tammy Wood are located in Kendall, just outside of Madison, and they've got everything for the smoking enthusiast, including a full assortment of pipes, water pipes, hookahs, bubblers, one-hitters, and so much more. They're open noon to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday and can help you with your detoxification therapies as well. Call 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com for more information. That's 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com. And as always, go Pack Go!
I'm Derek Pedro. I am a medical marijuana user and grower in Ontario, Hamilton, Canada. What you see here is basically one of my locations. That is a greenhouse facility. We actually consult for $30 an ounce here. We're basically providing medicine with natural light at about 30 cents a gram here at this facility. This is four people's medicine for about six to eight months worth for them. Again, no pesticides here. We just simply put unaffected plants in, making sure they're healthy. You can check out our website at mmar.ca. We are currently full. We're fighting the government. They're trying to take this away from us. Taking away our right to grow for personal production, as you see here, and basically now is going to commercial growers at a projected $8 a gram. So a lot of these people will not be able to afford their medicine a year from now.
Respect the law, but know your rights. And share if you can.
Ask me any question, I'm gonna plead the fifth. Unless you asking me if I wanna smoke a spliff, then I'll be coming over, I'm gonna take a lift. You know I leave you feeling like you got a touch of the gift.
Yeah, this is Brian the Red, and you're listening to 420radio.org. So get a little irie.
ding dong boom, biddy baba boom, biddy baba boom, ding 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 ding, biddy baba boom, biddy baba boom, ding 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 ding, biddy baba boom, biddy baba ding 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 ding.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for us to get behind the headlines. And today I'm taking a look at something that came across Huffington Post. The title of it was Marijuana-Loving Beer Breweries Embrace Weed-Themed Branding, Defying Federal Government. Kind of an interesting take here. And I've seen a couple of these brews as I've been at different clubs here in the Pacific Northwest. This is talking about basically since legalization has happened now in Colorado and Washington, more companies are less afraid to jump onto the weed themed bandwagon. I mean, not to mention, you know, the fast food industry. I mean, my God, every other Jack in the Box commercial is made for stoners. But the problem that the beer industry faces that these other industries don't face, right? Like if you're trying to pass off these ads, you know, for ice cream bars or sourdough jack sandwiches, right? You might get a protest from a pastor, from the PTA, you know, somebody might not like it, write a letter to the editor or something. But with alcohol, there is actually a federal bureau that controls how the beer brewers can advertise. It's called the Alcohol, Tobacco, Tax, and Trade Bureau. It's just TTB is what they abbreviate as. It's a small office of the federal government that approves all alcohol beverage labeling. And it's got a document from 1994 that forbids any weed references on alcohol levels, labels, right? The government document says drugs, drug terms, or slang associated with drugs are forbidden in beer labeling. And in the document, they also say, quote, "We do not believe that responsible industry members should want or would want to portray their products in any socially unacceptable manner," end quote. So this has caused a problem for a few of these brewers that have come up with some of these custom craft beers. There is one Dark Horse Brewing Company. They're in Michigan, and they had a brew that they sold called Smells Like Weed IPA. By the way, IPA is an India Pale Ale, and it has to do with the fact that when the British were, you know, colonizing India, shipping their beer all that time to get to India, it would go bad. So they had to make it more bitter and put more stuff in it. And that's why the IPAs taste a little different. I got a little beer education the other day. So anyway, these Smells Like Weed IPA got rejected by the feds. So they changed the name to Smells Like a Safety Meeting. Smells Like a Safety Meeting IPA. And of course, Huffington Post had to explain that a safety meeting is what we call a toke break when you're at work. All right. There's another brewer. This is up in Seattle, and this is the one I'd seen. Red Hook Ale Brewery has a joint effort hemp ale. Joint effort, right? But they're able to get away with that because they're not selling it anywhere but Washington State. Right. And of course, the feds only kick in once it's interstate commerce. Right. So they're able to brew and sell in Washington State only from Red Hook Ale, a joint effort hemp ale. It's got hemp seed in it. It's got kind of a nutty flavor. And the keg tap, the tap handle, is a bong. They've actually manufactured a bong tap handle for the brew. Now, there's another ban. That's kind of interesting. Since 1954, the government has banned any design or pictorial representation relative to the American flag on beer packaging. Don't tell Budweiser that with all their American flag, but Budweiser says that's not the flag. It's some other red, white, and blue thing with stars that they're paling there. All right. There's another brewer, Lagunitas, in Petaluma. I'm probably mispronouncing that. They had an ale called The Chronic. They had to change that to Censored since they couldn't call it The Chronic. And of course, the owner of this company kind of complained. He said, "Let me ask you guys a question. What do you think Bud means? What do you think High Life means?" Of course, you know, the feds don't care about it when it's the macro brewers that pay a lot of taxes. And then there's Concord, California-based Ale Industries that had one called Orange Kush. They had to change that to Orange Shush. Because we can't talk about the Kush. Mount Shasta Brewing Company in Weed, California, actually got away with their Weed Golden Ale because the American Civil Liberties Union came in and sued because it's about the city of Weed, right? And then there was a picture, it kind of made Brian a little upset, but another one of their brews, it was called Shastafarian Porter. So we've got a lot of the beer industry jumping in on the marijuana-themed bandwagon here, having to fight federal regulations that prevent them from mentioning weed. We're going to see, as marijuana becomes retailed in Washington and Colorado, the work groups have already specified that there won't be advertising of marijuana in any sort of form. I don't know how long this can stand up, and I don't think it's absolutely necessary. Yes, let's not aim the ads toward kids or have cartoons or anything, but why can't adults advertise a product for adults? All right. Speaking of the weed-themed culture, it's 420 back in the Mountain Time Zone in Colorado, America's weed capital, Denver. Happy 420 to all you dabbers out there.
That means it's time for a safety break.
Safety meeting!
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
NARMAL stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
It's quite simple. I'm a very nasty drunk. I get mean. I get loud. I'll tell your deepest, darkest secrets to a stranger, and I'll puke on your shoes. So if that's the kind of behavior that this culture promotes, you know, fuck it.
Your one room schoolhouse of choice. Your one-stop freedom shop. It's the Libra Lounge.
Sundays at 3, right here on 420radio.org.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, I hope everyone's a little mellower now that 20 after has passed. Time for our Roots Monday Daily Toker Tune. And before we get to it, quick programming note. Tonight will be a replay of the Viper Hour. I have new furniture from IKEA I have to put together in our new home. So we're going to take the night off, let you guys listen to a new Viper Hour, one of our old music episodes. I'm not sure which one we'll dig up. Maybe the Gene Krupa episode. I love that episode. So stay tuned for that tonight, 8 o'clock Pacific time, a full hour of the best reefer jazz, the origins of America's cannabis culture. And speaking of the origins of American cannabis culture, stay tuned later for our radical rant at 45 past. We're going to talk about the origins of the word marijuana. But for now, we're going to get right to our Daily Toker Tunes. And this weekend, there was an event out at Horning's Hideout. It's an annual event for the last couple of decades, I believe, the Northwest String Summit. And our own Herb Thrasher was out there getting some video, having a great time. He said it was incredible. I'm sure we'll talk about that on the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour this Friday at 8 Pacific. But in honor of that, I love this bluegrass music. I love that Americana, that old acoustic kind of jam. And we're going to bring you one from the Northwest String Summit. Actually, I don't know if they recorded this version at Northwest String Summit. I know they did a killer version of Michael Jackson's Beat It at the Northwest String Summit in 2009. This, though, is their cover. This is Yonder Mountain String Band with a cover of two hits, And the Joint Turned Brown.
Johnston wants one, two hits, one, two. Adam, taking the thing he wants, not just one, he wants one, two. Ben, well, he always wants the one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. Me, I could go for one or two or somewhere in between 30 hits. Now Bob Marley and his reggae band.
Two hits and the joint turned brown.
Playing that reggae music all over the land.
And the joint turned brown. Oh, sweet mama. Two hits and the joint.
too small to smoke,
too big to eat.
Two hits and the joint turned brown. Oh, sweet mama. Two hits and the joint turned brown. Oh, pretty baby. Two hits and the joint turned brown.
I see how it's gonna be. Not just shot A, but shot B. See what the do to our mind in this and play with the door, but it's a little bit bang. Little bang bang. Oh, wait, it must be High Country Stella Brand, Stella Skunk. Skunk in the monk in the funk in the monk in the shake, shake in the shake, shake in the shake, shake in the dang, the dang, pop the dang, shake the dang, shake the smoke, the dang, dang, dang. In his reggae band,
two hits and the joint turned brown.
Then I think I'm just a gobble of a boba band.
Two hits and the joint turned brown. Oh, sweet mama. Two hits and the joint turned brown. Oh, pretty baby. Two hits and the joint turned brown. Oh, sweet mama. Two hits and the joint turned brown. Oh, pretty baby.
This is the brain activity of a normal 14-year-old. This is the brain activity of a 14-year-old after smoking marijuana. If you use pot, you're not using your brain.
I'm a doctor.
I'm a lawyer.
I'm a journalist.
I'm a student.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a representative.
I have cancer.
The outdated laws of prohibition are more dangerous than the plant itself.
I lost my scholarship.
I was fired.
20 million arrests since 1965. This is getting ridiculous.
Our prisons are overcrowded with nonviolent offenders.
We have the opportunity to change.
This is costing our country billions of dollars.
Making my family and I fight in a courtroom is difficult enough when I'm already fighting through chemotherapy.
There's no reason to be scared by tradition anymore.
We can stop this.
We can stop this.
We are the American people.
We can stop this.
And you have our support.
We are old.
Young.
Straight.
Gay.
We're every race and nationality.
And we're not going to give up.
You can tax it.
You can regulate it.
Apply age restrictions.
You can create millions of new jobs.
We can save our economy.
President Obama?
It's time for legalization.
Legalization?
Yes.
We
can.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times Magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right, everybody, welcome to Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch. This segment is brought to you by Wood Pipes, Smoke Shop and Speakeasy in Wisconsin. And welcome back, Dr. Mitch.
Great to be here.
So great to have you here. We got a few questions that are building up in our chat room. If you got a question, make sure you get on chat or call us live at 971-533-7111. Heck, you don't even have to call us live. You can call us 24 hours a day. We got a voicemail. You can leave a voicemail question for Dr. Mitch if you like. But before we get to the questions, we always start giving Dr. Mitch the first word for the latest in cannabis science. What's up, Dr. Mitch?
Well, interesting website that Trixter Phillips forwarded to me with some misinformation about cannabis and pregnancy. I'm not a fan of cannabis use during pregnancy unless it's no other nausea drug seems to be doing the trick, but there's a lot of alarmist stuff out there. What we do know is one data set suggests that kids exposed to cannabis in utero were more likely to have ADHD at age 6 and 10, but they never measured ADHD in the moms, so we really don't know if that was causal or not. And then we have seen an increase in visits to the NICU in cannabis-using moms, but we're talking about something that's so incredibly rare that it would only have to increase a little bit to make it look like, oh, it's went from 1% to 2%. And they say, yeah, it doubled. So, again, I'm not a fan of the use during pregnancy, but there aren't a ton of data to suggest that this is some kind of detrimental, outrageous horror thing.
Now, on that information on ADHD, is there indication that ADHD is something that does have a genetic component to it that would pass from mother to child?
In fact, ADHD is highly heritable. We do see a father-to-son heavier loading in some of the genetic studies, but clearly there does seem to be a genetic component.
Okay, so let me get to one of our questions from the chat room, and this is coming from Dolink, who asks, he read some articles regarding dry mouth and cannabis, one by a dental hygienist that suggested that this was a terrible, terrible thing. He's pro-marijuana, and my dentist says users are at risk for caries caused by activation of endocannabinoid receptors of the salivary glands. I don't know if he means cavities or what caries might be, but what do we know about dry mouth and dental health?
Yeah, caries does mean cavities, and there was one study suggesting increased rates of some gum receding and gum bleeding in folks who are regular cannabis users, but I honestly don't think it has anything to do with cannabis and a lot more to do with falling asleep after an indica and eating raw cookie dough. Mm-hmm. The other big issue seems to be just heat, and obviously I'm not a fan of those little metal one-hitters that are going to make a whole lot of heat come into your mouth. So again, your vaporizer is your friend. Anything to keep the vapor cool is going to be a little easier on your mouth, but we're talking about some really minor effects compared to the more important things like making sure you brush and floss.
What are some of the ways, in addition to that, that regular cannabis users would be most successful in defeating dry mouth? I don't imagine candy or mints are necessarily a good idea with the sugar and all.
I mean, the curious thing is this is such an advantage for folks who, it sounds funny, but folks with MS in late stages who have problems with drooling really appreciate the dry mouth. So it's one person's symptom is another person's cure. But the clincher, as banal as it sounds, is just having a glass of water right there. The mints and things like that seem to be an invitation to some gum and tooth problems. And water is so accessible now, why not go for it? Everybody seems to have one of those hip filter bottles. When I was in L.A., it was almost so cool that if you didn't have one, you were kind of looked down on.
What about the products out there that claim to quench thirst, the Gatorades and Powerades that claim to replace electrolytes and such?
I mean, the clincher on that is you do lose some electrolytes, but unless you're working out really heavy duty, like unless you're going to be out in the sun for more than an hour or you're going to be exercising really hardcore for more than an hour, odds are high water is really the thing you need the most, and that this is a rather expensive way of getting those electrolytes. So they certainly don't seem to do much harm. They're also a lot more caloric than some of them let on. So you think you're doing something good for yourself and realize you just quaffed another 250 calories, and it kind of can defeat the point of the workout for some folks.
Good point. Medigrow Vermont has a good question. This is referring to, I believe, most recently on the Katie Couric program, where Dr. Sanjay Gupta, who was also had been a CNN contributor. Now, I remember Dr. Gupta saying some pretty negative things about cannabis not 4 or 5 years ago. Apparently, he's been having some good things to say about it recently. Have you been following on Dr. Gupta's television pronouncements any, and anything you can tell us about him?
So literally, even 2 years ago, he was saying just absolutely ridiculous anti-cannabis things. And then this last time on Katie Couric, apparently he said something moderately positive, but I'm so biased against him, I couldn't even encode what it was.
Okay, apparently he's got some documentary on cannabis coming up in August. So we'll watch for that, and we'll get your reaction after that. Here's a good question from John Thomas. Says new research shows that THC can help prevent heart attacks and improve recovery after one. Is there any reason to believe an average marijuana consumer would not obtain this benefit?
So this is a curious thing because one big review suggests, in fact, this is problematic for cardiac health, and then the antioxidant properties make it seem obvious that this should be helpful. So I'm mistrusting a little bit on each side. The mechanisms sound compelling in each direction. THC tends to increase heart rate. In fact, you know, smoking cannabis tends to increase heart rate. So if you have a problem with rhythm, any kind of cardiac arrhythmia, things like that, that may be something that could put you at risk for problems. But in contrast, all the cannabinoids really have these interesting antioxidant effects that tend to minimize some of the damage that can be done to cardiac muscle and cardiac tissue in general when you're exposed to extreme aging and things like that. So it seems like this would be at least a break even, if not a modest benefit. But any of these big lung buster hits where you're holding your breath a lot and feeling your heart rate increase really rapidly, that's really just a poor use of cannabis.
All right. Here's a story that we got from our headlines today, and it was from HIVandHepatitis.com. A study showing that marijuana did not promote liver disease progression in people co-infected with HIV and Hep C. And I'm wondering, Dr. Mitch, why would they even wonder about that? I thought marijuana was not toxic to the liver. Why would they even think that it would cause or promote liver disease?
I mean, the funny thing about this is that they're so in search of some negative that this was funded before things were so clear that the liver disease issue was really not an issue. And it's unfortunate, but people are still getting denied liver transplants if they're cannabis users. And that is just so wrong and so idiotic. So I was happy to see that there was a journal that was willing to put this out, in part just to help buttress arguments for liver transplants for folks who are medical cannabis users. But also the combination of HIV and Hep C, I mean, it's just such a horrible double whammy. And so they didn't want to overgeneralize from folks who didn't have HIV to folks who do have HIV. And it was just reassuring to see that this is the case even in that sample.
Yeah, and this, you know, hits us here at the show so personally because of our friend Ganja John, who had to go through transplants and, you know, had to, you know, basically hide and jive his way through the system to be able to get that transplant. And another friend of ours is Greg DeHote, a.k.a. Cannabis Cure, out there in the U.K. He came to the U.S. as a Crohn's patient and just in haggard shape when I first met him. His latest show, he's talked about how it seems his disease has gone into remission. He suffers from Crohn's disease. And last week we did a story from the journal, it came from the Journal of Clinical Gastroenterology and Hepatology, saying that marijuana could possibly cure Crohn's disease. What are you finding on that front, Dr. Mitch? And I think it's right. Greg looks great.
I mean, my looks at that literature are not as encouraging as these really heartfelt responses I've been getting on both Facebook and via email. When you think about at least some of the precursors to it, so we've got compelling data with irritable bowel syndrome, which has some of the same sort of symptoms. Curiously, I have a number of people who've been emailing me who suggest that when they quit smoking cigarettes, some of the symptoms flare up, and it takes about a month for some of that stuff to die down. So there may be some basically commingling of some of those same issues. When you see some of the vascular effects of the cannabinoids, it might make some sense, but we just don't have the randomized clinical trial yet. So I am so delighted about our pal over in the UK because, I mean, he really was not doing well and seems to be categorically better. We do know that it's got to be combined with a lot of the things that also help. So an appropriate attention to diet, mm-hmm. An appropriate attention to some of the other medications that can be helpful. Some interesting evidence on curcumin, some other plants that also seem to enhance some of these same flavonoids, terpenoids that might be the mechanism. And then by all means, let's get those randomized clinical trials done because I really feel like there's enough people suffering from this and they ought to have access to the medicine.
We have a question here from Medigrow in Vermont who says, insurance companies are changing a driver's rate when they find out you are a patient. And I assume they mean increasing and marijuana patient. Have you seen this happen with any other patients nationwide?
Sad but true. There's talk about doing this for folks who are chronically on the opiates. And in fact, you develop tolerance to those and to the cognitive effects of cannabis. So I feel like it's kind of unfair because it's really just a modest correlation with accident rates, and it seems like it's just so unjust to seek these people out and then somehow assume that their accident rates are going to be higher. And I haven't seen the actuarial data, but I can't imagine it's really that incrementally large. There were data to suggest that cigarette smokers were at higher accident rates and in part should have been charged more for insurance, but it was actually because they were smoking cigarettes while they were driving and, you know, getting ashes on themselves and suddenly ending up in a crash. So, I mean, I feel like it's completely awry, one of these weird mathematical things that has gone in a bad direction.
All right. And finally, for our last question, again, last week we had a lot of science stories, and this one came from a place called truthonpot.com, a study on electroacupuncture on rats that found it kind of increased the endocannabinoid system, that this may be why acupuncture works. Had you ever heard of this, acupuncture working because it stimulates endocannabinoids?
No, but it's intriguing because we have seen other things where pain the effect of other analgesics is not as good if you block the endocannabinoid system. So it kind of makes some sense that this was a reasonable place to look. And I really do buy this. This was a decent sample size. They really did a good job as far as how they constructed this argument. And so it does suggest that in a way, when acupuncture does work, it's essentially endocannabinoid mediated.
Wow, we are learning so much every month, every year here about the endocannabinoid system. Just a few years ago, we didn't even know it existed. Dr. Mitch, thanks for joining us. And folks, if you didn't get your question in for our cannabis Q&A, you can always send it by email. Go to our contact form at 420radio.org/contact. Look for Ask Dr. Mitch in the dropdown. Or you can send your email directly to 420research@gmail.com. Again, Dr. Mitch, thank you for being with us every Monday here on Cannabis Q&A.
Thanks for everything, Russ.
All right, when we come back, time for a radical rant, a little history lesson. We're taking a look at the origins of the word marijuana.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Cast your eyes up to the skies. What is it to live and die?
Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they...
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Let's talk about marijuana. Not the plant itself, although we do have some of that. But let's talk about the word marijuana. Where exactly did it come from? This was a question that was asked by National Public Radio in their piece called The Mysterious History of Marijuana. And it's something that we've gone over a few times here on the Russ Belville Show and prior incarnations of this show. But it was time that we discussed it again. Primarily, the shorthand story that most people will tell you is that marijuana is a Mexican slang term for cannabis. And it was used to demonize the plant in the early 20th century in order to fool people who were well familiar with cannabis into voting against it because it was the evil Mexican marijuana. And while that it has a grain of truth to it, has a large degree of truth to it, actually, there are a whole lot of other factors that sometimes get lost in this story that I thought might be interesting to go over. Now, of course, the Mexican part of this is pretty easy to divulge. Eric Schlosser wrote about this in Reefer Madness. This is a quote from his book. The political upheaval in Mexico that culminated in the Revolution of 1910 led to a wave of Mexican immigration to states throughout the American Southwest. The prejudices and fears that greeted these peasant immigrants also extended to their traditional means of intoxication, smoking marijuana. Police officers in Texas claimed that marijuana incited violent crimes, aroused a lust for blood, and gave its users superhuman strength. Rumors spread that Mexicans were distributing this killer weed to unsuspecting American school children. Sailors and West Indian immigrants brought the practice of smoking marijuana to port cities along the Gulf of Mexico. In New Orleans, newspaper articles associated the drug with African Americans, jazz musicians, prostitutes, and underworld whites. The marijuana menace, as sketched by anti-drug campaigners, was personified by inferior races and social deviance, end quote. And that's kind of the story that we've all heard about marijuana. Is it basically around 1910, 1920, the Mexicans are pushing into the country. You couldn't arrest them for being brown, so you could arrest them for what they were smoking. And we get our first anti-marijuana laws, actually, in El Paso, Texas. I think it was 1906, 1907. I think that was about around the time. California had banned marijuana by 1913. They've gone through 100 years of prohibition. And of course, the federal prohibition through the Marijuana Tax Act took place in 1937. But keep this in mind, when the Federal Marijuana Tax Act passed in 1937, all 48 states, there was only 48 back then, all 48 states had already banned marijuana in one way or another. There was another very famous excerpt that came from congressional testimony. This is in 1937. This is attributed to Floyd Basquet, who is the city editor of the Alamosa, Colorado Daily Courier. And this was in the Federal Record. This is in congressional hearings, right? Said, quote, "I wish I could show you what a small marijuana cigarette can do to one of our degenerate Spanish-speaking residents. That's why our problem is so great. The greatest percentage of our population is composed of Spanish-speaking persons, most of whom show an enthusiastic or low mentality because of social and racial conditions." So, again, we get a lot of this coming from racism against the Mexicans. But it wasn't just the Mexicans that there was a problem with. Basically, anybody who was smoking pot, African-Americans, Mexicans. And in this case, in a letter to the California State Board of Pharmacy in 1911, Harry J. Finger, that's his name, Harry J. Finger, was a member of the State Board of Pharmacy in California. He wrote this, quote, "Within the last year, we in California have been getting a large influx of Hindus, and they have in turn started quite a demand for cannabis indica. They are a very undesirable lot, and the habit is growing in California very fast. The fear is now that it is not being confined to the Hindus, but that they are initiating our whites into this habit." It wasn't so bad if it was just the Hindus. I mean, you start getting the white women hooked on the cannabis indica. Oh, you got a problem. Also, this is basically where we end up in most people's minds. And this is where there needs to be a little more education in this, because the primary impetus, as I feel from a lot of people when they talk about this issue of the word marijuana, is racism. Yeah, it's racist. It's a racist word. It's a racist word used for racist purposes. But that's a little harder to comport when you learn a little the history of what was going on just south of the border. There was a book written by Isaac Campos, and it's a book called Homegrown, Marijuana and the Origins of Mexico's War on Drugs. Mexico actually banned marijuana in 1920, 17 years before the United States federal government passed the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937. And in Campos's book, he talks about how, you know, in American newspapers, we had the degenerate Mexicans, the degenerate Spanish-speaking citizens, the Negroes that were smoking the pot and would go after the white women and so on. But this similar kind of demagoguery and propaganda against marijuana was also going on in the Mexican press. Very interesting things that they wrote here. In Campos's book, he talks about some Mexican newspapers. And before 1900, right, before 1900, containing similar details. Here's one: a soldier driven mad by marijuana and attacking his fellow soldiers. This is from El Monitor Republicano, 1878. Here's another story. A pot-crazed soldier murdering two colleagues and injuring two others. La Voz de Mexico, 1888. And a prisoner stabbed two fellow inmates to death after smoking up. From El País, from 1899. So this is kind of interesting to note that in the Mexican press, they were demonizing marijuana, and they were spelling it with an H, or actually a G, M-A-R-I-G-U-A-N-A, in the Mexican press. And this didn't really catch up in America till post-1900. You look in the LA Times, you look in the New York Times, you look at the historical record of some of these newspapers that go back into the 19th century, and you'll find that pre-1900, people talk about cannabis or they talk about hemp. They talk about cannabis as a medicine. They talk about hemp as an industrial textile. You won't find mention of the word marijuana or even stories about people using it recreationally as cannabis or Indian hemp or cannabis indica. Or if there was any recreational mentions, it was always hashish. And that, you know, dates back to, you know, pre-19th century. The first few accounts you start to see using the word marijuana in the American press take place around 1900, 1905. We got this one 1905 Los Angeles Times story. Delirium or death. Terrible effects produced by certain plants and weeds grown in Mexico. So this is one of the first one. And in that story, here's one of the quotes. Not long ago, a man who had smoked a marijuana cigarette attacked and killed a policeman and badly wounded three others. Six policemen were needed to disarm him and march him to the police station, where he had to be put into a straitjacket. Such occurrences are frequent. People who smoke marijuana finally lose their mind and never recover it. But their brains dry up and they die, most of time suddenly. End quote. So this is all the way back to 1905, but again, still lagging behind the Mexican press that is denigrating this drug pre-1900. And so what we're finding here is on the Mexican side of the border, you're getting a denigration of marijuana because of class issues. Whenever they talked about in Mexico about somebody going nuts here, it was somebody that was, a soldier or a worker, or, you know, somebody who's of the lower classes using the marijuana. In America, it seems to be used in a racist way, but in a sense, it's really more of a class warfare if you look at it in the right perspective, because of the immigrants that were coming in to take jobs, the lower skilled jobs that were going on. And the mention earlier of the underworld whites, that there was part of the criminal class, part of the undesirable class. Now, there's no denying racism is at the heart of a lot of that, but it's at some point, there's at some level in American culture, it's hard to separate class and race, being that the most of the people of color were in the lower classes. So we have this happening throughout the press in the early 20th century. Now, where did the word actually come from? That's what we want to get to here. And it's hard to actually discern the etymology of this word. We do know that the Spanish brought cannabis to Mexico to cultivate it for hemp. So that's, you know, in the late 1400s, early 1500s, we know about that. But it's unlikely the Spanish that used it for psychoactive purposes. They were growing it just like the colonists in America in 1611 at the Jamestown colony. They're bringing it in for the industrial properties of it. Now, one of the theories as to the origin of the word marijuana comes from Chinese immigrants to Western Mexico. We have to understand that just as we had Chinese immigrants in America, you know, helping to build the railroads, you know, San Francisco and all that, they were also on the Mexican coast, the Mexican Pacific coast. And the Chinese words that could refer to the plant, ma ren hua. Now, ma is the generic term for all tall, reedy plants, hemp plants, bamboo plants, jute, sisal, and so on. Hua, I know there's like, that's another plant word. I'm not sure what Ren is saying at first, I think. But Ma Ren Hua might have become Spanishized into marijuana. Another theory is that it came from colloquial Spanish as a way of saying Chinese oregano. Mejor ana chino would be the Spanish term. Or maybe Angolan slaves brought to Brazil by the Portuguese carried with them the Bantu word for cannabis. The Bantu word for cannabis is ma kanya. Ma kanya. There we go. Or maybe the term simply originated in South America itself as a blend of the Spanish girls' names Maria and Juana. And there are so many other, there's a loco weed is another, which is actually a whole different plant, astragalus, something like that. But there's a lot of theories as to where marijuana came from. But to me, the important issue for us now is the use of the word itself. And is the use of the word marijuana racist? I know a lot of people in our movement think so. And a lot of people, you know, strive to say the word cannabis at all times. I have a general theory on this, and my general theory is this. Marijuana may have been used for racist purposes by racists to scare people into fearing the plant. But I don't believe that a word itself, absent context, can necessarily be racist. And in the case of marijuana, if it's a slang term for the flowering tops of cannabis plants that you then dry and smoke, I think it has a good purpose. Sometimes when people say, oh, we're smoking cannabis, I feel that's not quite accurate. That's too broad. I don't smoke stalks. I don't smoke leaves. I don't smoke seeds. I smoke cannabis buds. And if we can have a word for that, marijuana, why not use it? It doesn't have to be a racist word. I like cannabis as the name of the plant, its entirety. I like hemp as the name of a certain variety of that plant, grown specifically for an industrial purpose. I like the word marijuana for the flowering tops that are being used for recreational purposes or even medicinal purposes. And a lot of people disagree with me on this, and especially worldwide. Worldwide, it's cannabis. Marijuana is a very kind of American term. But there are some practicalities to take a look at this as well. When you're doing a Google search, you're going to get 10 times the hits on the word marijuana as you do on the word cannabis. Because people think of marijuana and associate that specifically with the plant, with the use of the plant in a recreational manner. And I think by self-censoring the word marijuana, we give that word more power than it really has. We give to our opponents, we kind of imply that there's something bad about the recreational use of smoking cannabis, the flowering tops. And I know the idea is to try to reframe it by calling it cannabis, but if we're going to reframe, let's be accurate. And like I say, I don't smoke cannabis. I smoke some parts of cannabis. If we can have a word for that, I don't see what's wrong with it. And then if we talk about the other terms, pot, weed, and so forth, well, sometimes in a Twitter world or a headline world, characters matter. Marijuana has nine letters, pot has three. If you're trying to get 140 characters into a headline or into a tweet, pot can be a whole lot more useful. And again, in America, pot's going to get you more hits than cannabis does. So let's just find a way that we can deal with this word. If you don't like particularly using it, that's fine. But don't jump all over other people that use the word. They're probably not using it in a racist sense. We're not Harry J. Anslinger or Harry J. Finger, for that matter. We know that when we say marijuana, we're talking about the buds that we smoke and the friends that we smoke it with. We can take this word for ourselves and disarm it of all of its racist past. Well, that's all the time we got here for hour one. Stay tuned for hour two. We got some special video from Brian the Red from the Justice for Trayvon Martin rally in NOPO. That's North Portland for those out-of-towners listening. Also, we've got Left Wing Larry hanging out in the studio. We might talk to him just a little bit on his first week in Portland, Oregon. The good, the bad, and the ugly. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned for hour two. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it.